Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. Today on the program with us today is a new guest, but I've known him for quite some time, and we've been trying to get a time scheduled to get him on. Eric Mushinsky, he's the founder of Phenom Ventures and editor of GoldInvestmentLetter.com. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Colin. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And as you're a new guest to the program, it's probably worth touching on your background. You've got a broad background, financially speaking. You've held quite a few hats over the past few years, and obviously you're quite dedicated at this point to the resource space. You see a lot of value there, as do we. Do you want to go over for a minute just what led you into the space?
Yeah, sure. I was a broker for 16 years in the U.S., and the last half of that, I basically branded myself as an alternative investment advisor, so a lot of hedge fund investing, private equity, venture capital, and that's where I found gold. And because of the, that was back in 2003, because of the nature of the mining sector, I think being very cheap, when I launched my entrepreneurial career in 2011, I decided to focus, keep my finger on the pulse in the markets, mostly exclusively to the resource sector where I saw the most opportunity. And that's when I launched the Gold Investment Letter.
Excellent. Well, the name would dictate that you're very focused on gold, but and that is the case, but you're not only dedicated to the gold space. So why don't we start off with kind of a broad discussion on commodities and where you see the commodities in context of the financial world as a whole right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're cheap. They're very cheap. I'm looking at a chart now where, you know, going back to 1971, where, you know, just from the Goldman Sachs commodity index to S&P 500 ratio, we're at the lowest that we've been in that duration. I mean, we're basically going back to 1971 itself. We're pretty much at that level, a little bit lower. Also from the late 1990s, we're also, you know, we're below one. And at that time, it was about 1.5 in terms of the ratio. So, you know, this is from just a broad perspective. We're extremely cheap on the commodity side. And if you look at on the upside, you know, when we can get up to a 7, 8, 9 to 1 ratio, you know, you're talking about the 1970s, the Gulf crisis. We saw quite a spike in 1990. And then also in, you know, in 2008 before things sort of melted down. So from the perspective of, you know, historically, I think that we're really poised, especially after we had such a blistering bear market. I mean, we all know that this is a very cyclical area. And I think at this point, it's good for us to take a little bit of a broader view and really remember that, because if you realize that it's very simple, after an extreme bear market, you have an extreme bull market. After an extreme bull market, you tend to have an extreme bear. So it's one of those things where we saw from 2011 until January 22nd of 2016, from a duration and severity perspective, it was the worst in history. I mean, we saw, even just with gold equities alone, we saw the indexes like GDX, GDXJ that were hatcheted by over 80%. So, you know, it would make sense that after you expunge an industry that much and it gets wrung that hard and you wash out any and all of the excesses, that as you move forward and you get a lot of that supply, the pipeline that is there from exploration, that was gone for a very long period of time. And so it's going to take time to ramp back up. And I think segues us into a point where you've got a combination of gold and commodity valuations for the mining companies being so low, and this setup that we've seen. It's going to be a robust next, I mean, not only a couple of years, I think we're talking about the next overall decade.
Well, let's zoom in a little bit closer there. As you mentioned, on January 22nd, 2016, that kind of kicked off what people are referring to as the bull market. And we had a pretty epic rally there for 8 months until August. Since then, it's been testing a lot of commodity bugs and gold bugs, in that things certainly are a lot better than they were before January 2016. but it's been in a flat and slightly downward pattern, just kind of sliding and consolidating. And it starts to test one's confidence when you're sitting there for such a long time, supposedly in a bull market. Do you think that kind of the second leg up is becoming imminent, or is this something that could continue for a while longer?
Well, you know, listen, I mean, after you get smoked and stretched out for years and years, it's natural for our tendency to be that you either just get a little bit spiteful towards the sector, or even worse, it's ambiguous and lethargic, where you just don't really pay attention because you figure, you know, this is just going to go on forever. We have a tendency to have our most recent memory and then associate that with what's coming next. And I think that's a huge mistake that investors make. When you look at, for example, on the GDXJ, and I do some technical work just from a timing perspective, you know, even if you've got a fundamental view, this is such a volatile space, it pays to look at these charts. And I pulled up the GDXJ on the monthly, which goes back a decade. And, you know, one of the most basic technical patterns that I highlighted to readers recently is this flagging triangle pattern that we're seeing in the miners that, you know, we've usually, when you have an apex of two angles that are coming together like a triangle that's pointing to the right, you're going to see a breakout or a breakdown of that before the apex hits. Sometimes it can go a little bit further than that, but it's not very common. So we're literally like 2 to 3 months away from that breakout. And when you also look at the fact that with gold testing the highs of 1350 to 1375. I mean, we're going back a few years now where that's been a cap. And so there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that we're going to break above that. And I think from a timing perspective, the miners might be giving us a little bit of a better indication because we already broke out of a long downtrend line for gold itself. When you look at that 10-year chart, it goes all the way from 2011 straight down, and we continue to bump up against that. But it actually was last August that we broke above it, and I like to see three closes in a row to confirm the breakout. So we saw that then in September and October. We came back down and tested the top of the trend line. But we've been above that now for, call it 6 months in gold. But on the miners, you're seeing a bit of a springboard ready. So look, I mean, could it break, could it roll over and we go back lower? Anything is possible. But typically, this is a continuation of the recent trend that we're going to see, especially when we've had all these different signals from the actual gold market itself. So I think that we're like a month or two away from seeing gold break above 1400. And the one thing I try to stress to my readers quite a bit, because this has been the ceiling for so long, this is huge. This is a huge deal because every institution, every individual that is sophisticated, that looks at any sort of major trend activity, will know that this is an actual huge breakout. So the next real resistance level on gold is back at the highs that we saw in 2011. What I think is very interesting is that if you look back to when this happened in 2011, when gold, I think it was in 2010 when it occurred, but when gold broke above 1400 last time, it only took 9 months to hit 1900. I think it could happen even faster this time, just because of the nature of how long this market has consolidated. So on the one hand, I think we're going to see some action here really, really soon. And it's been frustrating, but really the most important thing is, even if you're frustrated, is to pay attention and to be aware and have a plan that when we get that confirmation, just know that's a very significant event. And you need to deploy capital. When you feel comfortable that that has been broken and it's going to hold, it's time to put a lot of money to work and then just sit tight and let this stuff ride, because there's a tremendous amount of upside if and when that happens.
Well, I think that your rationale there makes a heck of a lot of sense. Investors, after being beat up for a while, can't imagine gold shooting to 1900 bucks in a matter of a few months. But you'd flip over to the crypto space a couple months ago, and there was some pretty serious investors claiming that we could be at $50,000 Bitcoin within a few weeks. So once things start to move, everybody's mentality switches and they start to see more of the positive side of things. And I agree that that could happen. Now, you got me thinking, if gold goes to that level and that quickly, what would happen to the resource stocks that we're invested in? And I mean, the run that would happen, of course, would be truly tremendous. So I want to use this as a segue to talk about some specific ideas that you have in mind. And you let me know before the interview that you'd be willing to share a couple ideas. Anything that you want to start off on more of the precious metals front, gold front, or maybe base metals companies that you're looking at, Eric?
Yeah, sure. One other point just to bring up on the potential upside, and also just with gold, you know, sometimes it's just really important to take a step back and look at the basics and the fundamentals. Gold has done its job from 1971 until today. Gold is up over 3,300%, and it averages an 8% a year, just under that average return. You look at that versus what it's supposed to be hedged against for us, and that's our currency and the buying power that's gone down there. You know, it's a no-brainer for an allocation, and it does its job over long periods of times. Although we know that, especially as it pertains to the miners, there are big booms and busts. But even with the commodity, you look at the last 10 years, we're minus 4% on that annual return. 5%, I'm sorry, with 5 years, it's a little bit tweaked from there, but it's negative. So to go back to its long-term trend line, you would look at gold being a better performer going forward in the short to intermediate term, just to get back to normalization. And when you look at the actual ability for the bull market in terms of the miners, when we started this, if you believe it started in 2016, we are very early. I mean, the number of weeks that we're into this is about 90. The shortest move in a bull market cycle for the miners was around 125 to 130 weeks. So another 50%, but the moves up there were also another 100 to 400% higher than we are today. Those were with the shortest duration. When you look into the longest, we're talking about 400 weeks, and we're actually looking at another quadruple to 6x higher from an index perspective. So I just wanted to bring that up because these are recent charts that I've just found. So, you know, on the precious metal side with regard to some ideas, you know, I don't want to get into too many of the well-known listed companies because people know about McEwen Mining and First Majestic. These are smaller, obviously speculative plays that I think some of your readers like that might want to check out. So there's two. There's one that I'll give on the gold side, which is Orca Gold, or ORG. This is one that's very solid. There's not a better team or story as it pertains to the group that runs it and also the investors. It's the Redback Mining Team, which essentially started Redback as a shell in 2001. In 2010, they ended up selling it for 9 billion Canadian to Kinross. And this is with mines in Africa. I've never actually, I don't know historically if there's been a bigger win or transaction, but they're right up there. I mean, these guys know what they're doing as operators. They own a significant amount of the stock, and in fact, the second and third largest shareholders outside of the overall team is Lucas Lundin and Ross Beaty. And you're also looking at a situation where these guys are in Sudan, which is completely misrepresented in terms of the way that it's viewed from us when we hear the word to how they feel the country is in terms of operating versus where they've been in other parts of Africa in the past. That deal's got very, very big potential. There's another one that I like a lot called Gungnir, G-U-G, which is very, very small. They operate in Sweden. They actually are being subsidized with a $5 million cash royalty. It comes in every year at the end of April. They just got their first payment last year. They'll get it again coming up soon. They have a very interesting project in Sweden that's near Barsele and Orion in the Scandinavian area that has got some real potential on the gold side. They also had a new nickel copper discovery just this last season. They also have about 350 to 400 million in situ in nickel in the ground that gets no value in their market cap. I think the biggest plays that could happen in the base metal side this year are ones that your listeners are probably familiar with from Eric Sprott when you published the conference. One of them he focused on, which is Garibaldi. And so GGI is a topic of ours. But the bigger play we feel is with Metalis, MTS, which is just below Garibaldi. There are a lot of haters with this name, you know, particularly a lot of geologists that have come out and bashed the way that the company had released their first slew of news releases and drill results without drill maps and things. But I think those things have been rectified. And what we're onto here with this discovery by Garibaldi at Nickel Mountain is going to be huge. You know, this is going to be a very, very big and exciting drill program that they're going to be kicking off. I think Garibaldi will get back out there in April. They'll be the first ones out drilling. There's no question about that. But even if it's May, you're going to see a tremendous amount of anticipation built up in these stocks that occurs, I think, in the next 60 to 90 days, where they could both Metalis and Garibaldi retest their highs in the summer. And eventually I expect them to break out and go even higher. Now, you know, the way to make the big money in a cycle is obviously if you've got a backdrop of a cyclical or secular bull market in the commodity or the precious metal. But the way to do it, or the way that I've done it in the past with specific stocks, is in the earlier stages of a big discovery. I mean, I've had 25 baggers with companies like Zenyatta Ventures from 2012 to 13 with an interesting graphite discovery. And I think with Garibaldi, they are going to potentially shock the world. This thing could be very, very big. It's extremely rich nickel. I mean, it's extremely, extremely high grade. And they've got a bunch of other metals that are in there. And Metalis, I believe, is on the same structure. It's on the same rift. And they are going to have a much better idea this year of where to drill with the guidance of Dr. Peter Lightfoot and with some of the data that they're getting from Garibaldi as well. And Metalis has a very, very small market cap and tight share structure compared to Garibaldi. So if they do find some of the same results, then this thing could just go bonkers. And there's a lot of leverage there. So those are really, really exciting plays on the base metal side, and also a couple of flyers on the gold side.
Excellent. Well, we've got a few minutes left here, Eric, and I know that you've picked up on the super cycle that's happening because of the electrification movement and electric cars and grid storage, grid power. A couple of these companies I am actually invested in via Palisade Global, just as a disclosure, but it's actually great, and we'll use that as a platform for us to kind of mutually benefit both of our audiences here. There's one company that you like that's involved in the rare earth space as it applies to a lot of these components going into this new economy. And then a really exciting one is this vanadium play. And of course, anything else you got to go over?
Yeah, I think I was a little slow to come around to this space. I wasn't an early participant in the lithium area. But as I've gotten more information around the long-term trends here, there's no doubt there's some real opportunities if you can pick the right ones in these different areas. And, you know, the one on the rare earth side, you know, this is a great example of a sector that had a bubble and then blew up in a way over the last 6-7 years, where there are very, very few survivors. Of the survivors, how many of them are long-term very viable? There are tremendous metallurgical challenges with actually mining rare earths out of the ground. But one of the unique ones that both of us like is Medallion Resources, MDL. Medallion is a processor of monazite sand that actually has a very robust amount of these rare earths. The one that is the primary heavy rare earth is neodymium, which is very much needed in the electrification of cars and batteries. And this is an area that I don't think the market has picked up on yet. I mean, you've had big runs in lithium stocks, some cobalt plays have started to take off. I think nickel is a big beneficiary here as well. It's such a much bigger market that we haven't seen huge moves there. But with neodymium, we're starting to see it quite a bit. And Medallion is it's a tiny player. I mean, they're 15 cents, the market cap with very tight share structures, a few million bucks. And these guys are actually real. And they're the candidate, I think, to be the next, the true candidate to be the next producer of rare earth metals in North America. Even if they won't be a large producer, they can start out smaller and take steps that would bring them into that realm. And, you know, the upside's very, very big. And I think there's a couple of different possibilities there, but mainly you're going to see money flow back into the rare earth names. And when the money flows back in there, there's really not a lot of places to go. So I think Medallion could benefit tremendously. The stock's at 15 cents. It's a high risk type of a situation. They have to move that process forward in terms of actually raising capital to build a processing plant, but it's very manageable at this point. They've scaled that back quite a bit from their ambitious plans about 7 years ago, 5 years ago, and the stock's got a lot of upside. So that's one we like there. The other area with vanadium is very intriguing to me. I think, you know, whenever you've got a guy like Robert Friedland that's come out, I've got the quote actually right in front of me, which was, "We believe the electrification of the world economy is inevitable. We think there's a revolution coming in vanadium redox flow batteries. Larger scale deployment over the ensuing 5 years in China will result in vanadium flow batteries revolutionizing modern electricity grid." That's a big statement. He also came out at that conference and basically said, you want to make some money, go find some good vanadium projects and you'll make some money. So that's what I went out and tried to do. And the best pure play I think that exists today fell in my lap from a referral called Cornerstone Metals. CCC is the symbol. Stock is, market cap here is $8, $9 million. It's still very, very low. They have an extremely tight share structure prior to the recent financing where they raised $3 million. So they are cashed out. They had a 20 million share outstanding count. So call it 30 million at 30 some cents. You know, $9 million market cap, and you've got a situation where this particular group is sitting on what probably is the highest grade, largest vanadium deposit in America. It's certainly one of the largest and one of the highest grade that exists, but nobody knows about it yet. I mean, they've got 284 million pounds of VTO5 with great grades, average grade of 0.515. And with this type of a market cap, I mean, they're not even trading they're trading one third of Prophecy, PCY, which is a fragmented player with a project that is inferior, certainly to Cornerstone's Carlin project. So this is a deal that could just take off. I mean, from here, it just looks very, very good. And these are long term trends. One of the things I want to mention that I learned recently is that vanadium has been climbing quite a bit. It's at 15 plus per pound in the spot market now, but China is going to require more vanadium in steel production starting in September. That's going to be huge for vanadium. And I think, you know, this isn't even getting into the battery element. This is just the steel application. So vanadium could continue to outperform almost all specialty metals. And again, you know, the rare earths had a situation where there was a bubble, it popped, and there aren't many players there. Vanadium just has never been in play before. So the amount of viable pure plays you can find, I mean, there's like two that exist, and Cornerstone's the best one. So very excited about that whole area. The last one I'll mention on the cobalt side, which we're also extremely bullish on, is Canada Cobalt Works, CCW. Used to be Castle Silver. They have the Castle Mine in Canada, which is very, very advanced. They've got the only added underground access in the cobalt camp. And, you know, they've been pulling samples of 2.5 to 3% cobalt over the last few months. This was a mine that was a primary silver mine for Agnico Eagle in the 80s. The CEO of Canada Cobalt, Frank Bassa, worked on the project back then, and they only were drilling for silver. Cobalt was not on their radar whatsoever. So they've left tremendous amount of the high grade cobalt. These guys are also pulling super high grade silver out of there, and they're finding gold. I think that Canada Cobalt could be, I think it's the best junior exploration play in that space, along with, you know, Cobalt 27 is more of what I would call the blue chip play in the space. But that's the way that we're playing the cobalt market, are those two names.
Well, Eric, thanks so much for coming on the program. I'd love to continue this discussion. I know there's other things that we could talk about, but of course, we can go ahead and record another interview in the coming months, and we'll see if your prediction for gold beginning to break out, which I happen to agree with, does come to fruition, and if so, it'll be an even more exciting time to talk and get your views on everything. So once again, Eric Muschinski, he's the founder of Phenom Ventures and editor of goldinvestmentletter.com. Thanks, Eric.
Hey, thanks, Colin. Have a good weekend. Ciao.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?